the show that's focused on investing strategies for today's needs and tomorrow's goals. This is Bucket Strategy Investing, presented by the Wealth Advisors at Lucia Capital Group. Now, here are Johnny Dean and Rick the Professor Plum.
Oh, yeah, welcome to the program. Welcome back, in fact. It's the midweek edition of Bucket Strategy Investing. And we're looking forward to another hour of your phone calls and your emails, etc., talking to you about your money, about your strategy, and so forth. Saving for retirement. It's what it's all about. We've got strategies for you. I'm Johnny Dean, got Rick the Professor Plum standing by here in studio, ready to take all of your pressing money questions. And we're going to start off with a discussion about something we got an email on yesterday, and I thought it was appropriate perhaps to at least address that today. That has to do with Social Security taxation. Your Social Security, in some cases, is subject to taxation for whatever reason. Often, it's triggered by other income that you may be receiving. So we're going to tell you about what that other income, it's called MAGI, the Modified Adjusted Gross Income. That's a section of your tax return. We'll tell you what it is and how the right planning techniques may keep some or all of your Social Security from being taxed. We'll see. Be nice. Our phone line's open right now, 877-PLANNER, Brain Trust standing by. You can also email us via our website, wealthed.com. Wealthed.com is your source for all the topics we talk about on this show. You should know what you're buying, you should know what you're investing in, and know what your goals are. That's wealth education. You can find that there at wealthed.com. That's how you get in touch with us, too. If you want to get in touch with the professor or anyone here at Lucia Capital Group off the air, our number right there is 800-644-1150. 800-644-1150. If you need a bucket strategy put together, you need one that's specifically tailored to meet your needs, the advisors can at Lucia Capital Group here can help you out. Again, 800-644-1150, the off-air number. Talk to them. Make an appointment. Just get your retirement plan in order. It'd be very, very helpful. You can also call us here in studio, 877-PLANNER. We've got the planners in studio to help you out right now, 877-752-6637. Whatever's on your mind, we open up the phone lines to everybody. Talk to us about your money, about your strategy, if you just want to know if you can get there from here. Now, so I was going through the emails yesterday. We didn't have a chance really to get into this on the show yesterday. So we're talking about this today. And it has to do with Social Security taxation, Professor Plum. And an email from Roberto in Laughlin, Nevada, I think helps sum this up a little bit. Roberto says, did my taxes last month, and something's been bothering me ever since then. Here's the situation.
Yeah, how much I owed.
Well, that I think some more was owed than Roberto actually thought. Here's the situation. 70 years old, some round numbers, Social Security, $13,500. A military retirement of $14,000, did a sale of stock and wound up with $5,000, and Tax Act said $744 of my Social Security is now taxable. I don't get it, says Roberto. Can you explain?
Well, sure. What happened was your MAGI got too high. What is your MAGI? Now, the reality is you're probably not going to owe any taxes at this level. With the amount of, no, you're not going to owe any taxes at this level. But it is disconcerting to see the tax number go up and the adjusted gross income go up, because you know that the higher your gross income goes up, the more taxes you may actually end up paying. And Social Security can be part of that bottom line adjusted gross income. Sometimes it's not, sometimes it is. What's the determining factor? Well, all these other incomes that you have are the determining factor, basically, for figuring out how much, if any, of your Social Security is taxable. Now, there's a lot of people that are very sure that Social Security is not taxable. And it may be true for you, but it's not true for everybody. There's a lot of misunderstanding and misconception when it comes to the taxation of the actual Social Security benefit that's paid to you in a year. The first one is that it matters when you're getting it, how old you are. There is no age issue with the taxation on Social Security. It doesn't matter how old you are, either on the young side or the older side. Age does not play a factor in the taxation of a Social Security benefit. Has nothing to do with it. It doesn't go away when you reach a certain age. It doesn't come in until you get to a certain age. Age is not a question in any way, shape, or form when it comes to determining the taxes that you may or may not pay on the Social Security benefits that are paid to you. The type of benefit that you're paid has nothing to do with it. Whether you're receiving a disability payment, a lot of people believe disability benefits are tax-free. And for a lot of people, a disability benefit they receive from a disability policy, insurance policy, those are tax-free. Sometimes if you're getting it from other sources, they're taxable if you're getting it as a salary continuation from work. But a lot of people believe that the Social Security insurance benefit from a disability claim is going to be tax-free. And for a lot of people, that's a true statement, but it's not because it's a disability. It's because their other income is very low. Everything around the taxation of Social Security revolves around how much other income do you have.
Right.
In today's world, if the only income you have is from Social Security, you don't have a tax problem. It's all about other income. Or there's one category where if Social Security is the only thing you have, it could potentially be taxable, and that is if you're married filing a separate return, but that's unusual. So let's go back to, for most people, if the only income you have, whether you're married filing a joint return or a single individual, if the only income you have is Social Security, you're not going to owe any taxes. But if you have other income, pensions, interest, dividends, IRA distributions, passive income from real estate, positive passive, capital gains, it may be that your capital gain doesn't incur a tax, but it could subject your Social Security to tax.
What about you own a bunch of municipal bonds, and those don't incur any taxes because they're tax-free?
The interest from tax-free municipal bonds is included in the calculation to determine if any, or and if there are, if it is taxable, how much of your Social Security is going to be taxable. Now, another misconception is that if my Social Security is taxable, it's taxable at an 85% tax rate. That is not true. We do not have an 85% tax rate on our current income tax code. Where the confusion is up to 85% of the benefit that I've received could potentially be taxable. If I have a $10,000 Social Security benefit for the year, up to $8,500 of it could actually be taxable. Not taxed at 85%, there's a big difference. Up to 85% of the benefit could show up as a taxable event in my income column, and at worst case scenario, 39.6% tax bracket. But that's for somebody making $500,000 or more, basically. So how much are you going to pay on taxes on your Social Security benefit, and is there anything you can do about it? Now, we first started seeing taxes on Social Security back in 1983. That was the first time that we ever had to deal with the taxation and Social Security. They saved Social Security back in 1983.
I find that hilarious.
There was a big discussion in the late 70s, early 80s that Social Security was going to go broke. Sound familiar? Yes, I know. So they did a few things. In 1983, they changed the rules. They lengthened, they extended the full retirement age. That's where we received the idea that 65 for some people was no longer going to be the full retirement age. It was going to increase, and it's ultimately going to be age 67. That came out of that 1983 act. Also, they decided that, well, since you're paying Social Security taxes, FICA taxes, and your employer is paying FICA taxes, the same amount, each of you gets to pay 6.2%, although back then it was a little lower. The money that the employer is paying is deductible to the employee, to the company, where the money you're paying is after tax. It's not a deduction. So half the money that you're paying into it or is being paid on your behalf is being paid with tax, pre-tax dollars. Then up to half of the money coming out on the benefit should be taxable. That's the rationalization they put to it.
Boy, that is reaching. I mean, that is really, really reaching.
So that's where they came up with the idea that up to 50% of your Social Security be taxable. Now, wait a minute, Rick, you just said up to 85 could be taxable. That's true. In 1983, when we first got the taxation, it was up to 50% of our benefit at most would be taxable. Then in 1993, they needed to save Social Security again. Actually, I think this one was to pay for something else. And they decided that, well, you're putting in some money through taxation into the Social Security Trust Fund. The company's putting in pre-tax money into the Social Security Tax, Trust. And that Social Security Trust is invested in treasuries that are earning interest, and you've never paid tax on that interest. So reality is you're receiving back not only just what you've paid into it on after tax, but the money that the your employer put in pre-tax and all that earnings. So up to 85% of your benefit should be subject to taxation, but only if you make too much money. You know, lesser paid people who actually get a bigger benefit, actually get some of the earnings from it.
Yeah, that's what makes it so backwards too. I mean, it's I would never advocate a higher tax.
Now,
but
don't get me wrong. When I say they get a bigger benefit, they get a bigger benefit in relation to the income that they had.
Yes.
Somebody who has an income of $30,000 gets a much bigger percentage of that income as a Social Security benefit than somebody who makes $100,000. But the person that makes $100,000 is going to have their benefit taxed, where the person that makes $30,000 is not.
So the fact that your benefit is taxed, we sort of kind of explained that. I know it's a little, you know, wonky, but that's how it is. There, you could be subject to up to 85% of your Social Security being taxed. Now, how do you fix that? What do? You strategize. We'll talk to you more about that. 877-PLANNER, give us a call. We're coming right back. Talking about your money, Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum, strategizing with you, Bucket Strategy Investing. This is what we do on this program. Planning, retirement, Social Security. We're just talking a little bit about Social Security taxation. We did, by the way, 877-PLANNER, our number. Get in touch with us right now. We've got lines open, 877-PLANNER. We were talking about an email that we had gotten from a guy who, actually, as you said, Professor Plum, he probably isn't going to wind up paying taxes necessarily on based on his particular income. Let me just go back over this again. This was a 70-year-old Roberto.
Well, he's a single individual. He'll pay a little bit.
$13,500 Social Security and had a military payment about the same. Sold some stock, but there he said $744 of his Social Security is taxable.
Yeah, unfortunately, he went over the modified adjusted gross income threshold by about $1,500.
Right. Now, so that modified adjusted gross income obviously is separate from your regular adjusted gross income.
Yes.
So whenever somebody gets Social Security payments, they're required to figure out, I guess, this modified adjusted gross income.
Yes. They have to look at calculating a arbitrary number, just a number that they come up with to run through a formula to determine how much, if any, of the Social Security benefits paid you for the year can potentially be taxable. And so they do look at the benefit paid to you for the year before the reduction for the Medicare premiums. So if I have a benefit of $2,000 a month, but I'm paying, you know, $100 for Medicare Part A and $50 for Medicare Part B, even, and I only get a check for $1,850 is not what goes into the equation. $2,000 a month goes into the equation. So they look at the amount of money paid to me, not necessarily the amount of money that I receive. The Medicare premiums could potentially be an itemized deduction, but don't count on it. Very few people get to actually itemize their deductions at that point when it comes to that. Anyway, how much of your Social Security benefit could be taxable? Well, they look at this number called the MAGI, the Modified Adjusted Gross Income for Social Security Benefits, and they look at all the taxable sources of income on your tax return. Everything from wages right down to the line right above the Social Security benefit. The Social Security benefit is one of the last lines on the income side of the equation. And they're looking at every line mm-hmm. of income. Dividends, capital gains, net losses, though, would help reduce this number. Passive income from real estate, pensions, Social Security, IRAs. Everything that is a potential taxable event on your tax return, plus all the tax-free income from municipal bonds, as John mentioned earlier, get added into the equation. They take all of those different incomes, and then they add half, only half, of the Social Security benefit paid to you for the year into the equation. So your modified adjusted gross income is half of the Social Security, plus all the other taxable sources of income that you have, plus tax-free income. They look at that number. Now, you are allowed to take some deductions from it. If you are working, but your spouse is receiving Social Security, and you make an IRA contribution, you get to take that off the top. So all those deductions at the bottom of the page, those deductions for most of them, not all of them, for adjusted gross income, those can come down. They can reduce your MAGI. But basically, you're trying to calculate a number, and it doesn't include 100% of everything, but it does include most of everything. Half of the Social Security is the big difference. So now you've got MAGI. Now all you do is compare it to a couple of numbers. You have, as a single individual, you have a low threshold and a high threshold. If your MAGI is under $25,000, then none of your Social Security is taxable. The next thing you're going to do, though, is look at it and say, if it is more than $25,000, is it also higher than or lower than $34,000? If it's lower than $34,000, then it's a fairly simple equation. It's 50% of the excess. How much over the 25? I'm at $30,000 of MAGI. I'm $5,000 over the threshold. Well, that means that half of that excess money over the threshold, that amount of my Social Security is taxable as long as it doesn't exceed 50% of my actual benefit. The bigger problem comes in is if my modified adjusted gross income is over the higher of the two thresholds, and for a single individual, that's $34,000. Then the calculation becomes a little more complicated.
It already sounds complicated right now.
But it starts ramping up very quickly at this point.
Yes.
And they start adding 85 cents of Social Security benefits to every dollar that's over the threshold until you reach the magical 85% number, which is the top of the Social Security taxable event.
Yeah.
Now, those numbers again, 25,000 and 34,000 for a single taxpayer. For a married couple filing a joint return, the thresholds are 32,000 and 44,000. Now, the curious part about those particular numbers are they don't change. Almost every other threshold in taxation changes with a cost of living adjustment almost on a yearly basis.
Yeah, they put these in. I mean, the second tier has been put in place since, what, 1993?
Well, the first one was put in place in 1983.
Right, of course. But that's never changed.
In 1983, not that many people had a MAGI over $25,000.
Well, if you did, you were I was going to say you were fairly wealthy if you did at the time.
And then
has not changed in 33 years.
And it has nothing in the books to change.
Right. So of course not.
There is no provision to change that unless Congress, right, goes and actually makes a law that changes those thresholds. It's not going to happen.
So now what do you do? Okay, you said a little bit, the modified adjusted gross income on your tax return is really what determines how much, if any, of your Social Security is going to wind up being taxable. What do you do?
Well, the only thing you can do is try to either control that or manipulate it in a fashion that you show different incomes at different times. Maybe you show a little bit more income before you have your Social Security and then less income from other sources after you take your Social Security. We see this a lot being done by somebody who may be retiring at 62, 63, 64, who is going to postpone taking their Social Security until 70, and they live off of or they do large conversions of Roth IRAs. Now remember, this isn't a tax bracket we're talking about. We're just talking about how much of the Social Security is potentially taxable. What tax bracket you pay it in depends on what your other income is and how that other income is created, whether it's coming from capital gain, whether it's coming from pensions and that. So we have to look at what is the actual effect on the tax bill by including this money in the taxable column. And for some people, it becomes a very high taxability where they're in the 15% tax bracket. They've got a lot of room. Married couple, you know, they may have a total income of $60,000, you know, 30 of it coming from Social Security and 30 of it coming from pensions and things, where a large portion of their Social Security is taxable, where they may have been better off living off of personal money for a little while, still taking their $60,000 of income, but getting it from a different source, not taking Social Security. And that puts them, and they have a lot of room in the 15% income tax bracket to reduce the IRA value by doing conversions, to do lots of things, so that by the time they get to 70 and their Social Security is now $45,000 or some much larger number, they don't need as much maybe from their portfolio, but now they're still getting their $60,000 of income, but only 15 of it is coming from a taxable source. The other 45 is coming from Social Security, and at that point, almost none of it is taxable, and if any of it would, none of it would be taxable at that point. So controlling and actually forecasting, it works a lot better if you take this into consideration before you get to retirement, before you take your Social Security,
yes,
looking into it so that you can control the one expense none of us wants to pay, taxes.
And there are ways to do this. You know, a lot of people don't recognize until, as our emailer did, until perhaps they have to start taking required minimum distributions out. At that point, it really becomes noticeable. So there are ways to reduce that. 877-PLAN or give us a call. We got lines open. We'll take your calls when we come back. John Eady and Professor Rick Blum from Lucia Capital Group. We're coming right back. is all about planning, in our case, bucket strategy investing, talking to you about planning, about strategy, about your retirement, trying to help you save a little bit of money on, say, taxes in this particular instance. Now, I know tax time has come and gone, of course. It's been quite a while now. But you still got to be thinking about taxes. And you know, Professor Plum, when we talk about Social Security taxation, you know, a lot of people, I said this before the break, a lot of people don't even know that it's going to hit them until it hits them. Until it does hit them.
When you mentioned, you know, tax time is over for 2015, yeah, we filed our returns, you know, a month or two ago. Now is the time to look at how to change it. The time to look at your tax situation is not after the fact when you can't do anything about it. Now is the time. December is not the time. I know everybody runs the specials on the radio, TV, and the journalists, what to do about your taxes. By the time December rolls around, there's not a whole lot you can do about your taxes. What has happened for the year has happened for the year. So the time to actually do something about your taxes is now, because you haven't a time to effect change. You can do something about it. Now, what do you do? Well, it depends. It depends on what you need to accomplish in your tax life. You have to take a look at where you are. Where is your income going to be coming from? Are you still working? Have you started your Social Security? Is the majority of your assets for retirement, are the majority of your assets for retirement sitting in tax-deferred retirement accounts, 401k, 403b, 457, IRAs, so that you are going to have a big taxable event when you retire? Do you have the ability to do any Roth conversions? Is now a good time to do Roth conversions? Are you still working, or are you retired and waiting to take your... There's all kinds of issues that revolve around this giant tax puzzle that you need to put together that is specific to you. And that way you can control, potentially, the one expense we all hate, taxes.
Right. And you said that just before the break, and it's an important point to make, I think, Professor Plum, because let's say you're age 62, you've got a married couple, and they're thinking about, well, maybe we'll take Social Security. You know, we have some pensions coming in or whatever, and, you know, we have enough with Social Security. But they've also got, say, looming in the distance 7-8 years from now, whatever it is.
Some nice, big, juicy required minimum distributions.
Right, and let's say that they've got a, you know, the bulk of their nest egg is in that IRA or those IRAs or combination of and so forth. And they know that come age 70 and a half, they're going to have, you know, as much as a $30,000-$40,000 required minimum distribution.
Let's go back to the example I was using before the break. We've got a couple who, if they start their Social Security now, you know, they could have $30,000 a year, $30,000 between the two of them.
Right.
And they want to retire on $60,000 a year. And they have, you know, $750-$800 million in an IRA. Uh-huh. So they can easily take $30,000 a year out of it, easily, I mean, supposedly, and, you know, add that to the $30,000 of Social Security and be comfortable. But if they do that, they're going to be paying some taxes on the Social Security. They're going to be paying some taxes on that that $30,000 of income coming out of it. I don't know that the numbers work out in favor of this. We're just making this up as we go. But maybe instead of taking their Social Security early, well, obviously we have to look at longevity. Let's say that they think one of them has some decent longevity. And so we're going to look at and say, well, maybe the higher wage earner, the higher Social Security benefit, does not take a benefit right now. So only one of them takes a benefit. Maybe they're only getting $1,000 a month. So that leaves a lot of room on the table.
Sure.
You know, $70,000-$80,000 a year. So we can take 50 out to live off of and take another 30, 40 out a year to convert over to Roth IRAs. I'm going to pay 15% on it either way. I'm either going to pay 15% on it now, not including the taxation on Social Security, or I'm going to pay 15% on it when I'm 70 and a half or older, and pay 15% on about 85% of my Social Security. That's a higher tax bill for the same income. So let me pay the 15% now without receiving the large Social Security. And then at age 70, I've converted large chunks, maybe, you know, $300,000-$400,000 of traditional IRA over to Roth IRA. So instead of having $1 million in my traditional IRA when I'm 70 and a half, which creates a $40,000 required minimum distribution, maybe I only have $500,000 or so. And the other $500,000, because of growth and everything, is over in the Roth IRA. And so now my required minimum distribution is $20,000. But my Social Security benefit is $45,000, $50,000. And so I've got all the income I mm-hmm. need at a much, much lower tax bill going forward. And not only does it potentially help the individual, the couple in this case, but what happens when somebody passes away? That survivor can't have anywhere near $100,000 and stay in the 15% bracket. They can only have about $50,000. And their Social Security becomes taxable not at the $32,000 of Magi level, but at $25,000 of Magi. Wouldn't it be better for the survivor to inherit a much larger Roth IRA than traditional IRA and be efficient with the ability to get the money from point A to point B? Now, maybe you don't have that particular scenario, but so we have to look at what's going to happen. I've talked to one gentleman about a year ago who's making very large contributions or conversions to his IRA, to his Roth IRA. If he just goes on doing what he's doing, he's going to pay 85% of his Social Security is going to be taxable. So what he's doing, it creates an effective almost 28% tax bracket for the rest of his life. So what he's done is he's looking and saying, well, I'm going to bite the bullet over the next 5 or 6 years and do very large conversions and convert all of my IRA, almost all of my IRA, over to Roth IRA, paying 28% tax bracket. I'm going to do that for 3 or 4 or 5 years. And then after that, I'm going to be in a zero tax bracket because all the income that he's going to be receiving is from Roth IRAs, tax-free. It's been 5 years. He's over 59 and a half. And Social Security. The only income he has that will show up on a tax return anywhere is the Social Security benefit. And at the beginning of the show, I said, if the only income you have is Social Security, it's not taxable. So he's got a Roth distribution, which has nothing to do with the tax return because it's a qualified distribution.
Mm-hmm.
But to get from point A to point B, yeah, he's got to take a bite.
Now, in this case, you said he was paying a 28% income
effective bracket.
Effective bracket to do these Roth conversions. I mean, was he going to be
He's doing a 25% mostly.
Okay, well, 25%. But if he had waited until age 70, the tax bill would have been the same.
It's going to be the same if he continues doing what he's doing now, just taking the money out that he needs to live
mm-hmm.
and his Social Security, which he can't undo. It's been more than a year.
Yeah.
He's going to be in a 28% bracket for the rest of his life. For hopefully 30, 40 years, okay, 30 plus years. Or he can be in the 28% bracket for 4 or 5 years.
And then
be tax-free forevermore.
Yeah, one of the nice things about the Roth, I'll take tax-free for the rest of my life.
I mean, the reality is it doesn't, I mean, overall it's about the same. I mean, it'll help his heirs, it'll help everybody else a lot more than him, because he's going to pay 28% either way. 25% either way.
Right. So.
But it makes him feel better about doing it.
Yeah. And again, what this requires is you to actually pay some taxes now.
Yes.
And we're talking before required minimum distribution age. The goal in this person's case was to get rid of that pre-tax IRA.
Now, just because you are at required minimum distribution age doesn't mean that it still can't help you. It may be that you do accelerate it a little bit, because a lot of times we are already paying tax on our Social Security benefits. And we don't have a lot further to go to hit that 85% level. But we may have another, you know, $40,000, $50,000 to go to hit the top of the 15% bracket. So I can actually reduce my overall effective tax rate by increasing my income. Sounds weird,
yeah,
I know.
Yeah, explain that if you would.
When I get into the situation where I'm starting to pay taxes on my Social Security benefit, every new dollar, and I'm in the 15% over ordinary income tax bracket, but every new dollar I take out of my IRA costs me 15 cents on that dollar, but it also costs me 15% of 85 cents of a Social Security dollar that wasn't taxable before. So in essence, I'm paying 15% on $1.85. But that 85% inclusion of Social Security only lasts until I hit the top of the 85%. Once all of my Social Security benefits are being taxed, once 85% of my Social Security benefits are being taxed, then I go back to what is my marginal tax rate? 15%. So I've seen it where people only have about another $1,000 or $2,000 to go, and then they will drop out of it, costing them 27.75% tax on that dollar, and drop back into a 15% true tax bracket. That way we can take advantage of that 15% true tax bracket, convert, and try to get it over as much as possible so that we can create another source of income later in time from a tax-free source and try to help reduce the ultimate taxation down the line.
Now, can you do this whether you're 70 and a half or not?
You can do it whether you're 70 and a half or not. Remember, the only thing that you can't do at 70 and a half is convert the required minimum distribution. But if I'm living off of some of the money anyway, I'm probably not going to convert 100% of the distribution anyway. So I leave the required minimum distribution out because I have to, And then if I have room, I can convert anything over and above that. So it's all about controlling. Now, we're also looking at where are the income sources coming from? Do I have a lot of capital gains? Capital gains in the 15% tax bracket have what tax bracket?
Zero.
What do they do to your Social Security, though? You may end up paying taxes on your Social Security with a big capital gain bill.
Because it adds to your MAGI.
So we have to look at tax harvesting. There's all kinds of things to do to try to manage the different types of income that are showing up on your return.
It's all about planning, and this is what you're hearing on this program is brilliant stuff, folks. Give us a call if you've got questions. It can be on anything at all. Whatever money issue you have, you give us a call. We'll take your phone calls and an email or two when we come back. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum, this is Bucket Strategy Investing. It's Bucket Strategy Investing. Hey, we got room on the phone, so if you have money questions, give us a call. We'd love to talk to you about it. 877-PLANNER. We got room right now, in fact, suddenly. 877-752-6637. And, of course, if you liked what you've heard so far, guess what? There's another hour coming up of this in many or most cities across the country. And if you didn't like what you heard the last half hour, whatever it was, guess what? There's still another hour coming up in most cities across the country. So we hope you can join us for that. And yes, we do have lines open. We're here to take your calls. 877-PLANNER, our number, PLANNER, 877-752-6637. Room for emails as well. These are a couple of emails that were from a week or two ago that we hadn't had a chance to answer yet, Professor Plum. So I don't know if you've seen these or not. But this one is from Richard in Las Vegas. By the way, you can email us at our website, wealthed.com, wealthed.com. Richard in Las Vegas, I will be getting a six-figure payout from a trust. Are there any investment vehicles that provide a guaranteed 4% return or better? I heard the guaranteed word in there.
Potentially. I mean, how long do you want to lock the money away for? There are ways to get 4% guaranteed returns on certain bonds, even high-rated bonds, that pay 4% interest. Of course, you have interest rate risk where the value of that security may go down or will go down if interest rates go up. And so you're basically locking into it and holding it until maturity, which may be a very, very long time away. So it really comes back to what are you really trying to accomplish with this? Do you need to live off interest only for the next 30 years? Because if you do, let's say you had $100,000 and you got $4,000 of interest, and you have a 20-year, very high-rated bond that's paying you 4%. Well, 20 years from now, you're still getting $4,000 a year. Now, you'll get your money back, but if you had to sell that bond at any time between now and the end of that 20-year period of time, it may be worth a very different number than the face amount of $100,000 in this example. It could be worth, $75,000, $80,000 if interest rates actually went up a lot. Now, it probably isn't going to hurt you too much in the next couple of years because we don't really see much happening, although they're talking about raising interest rates again. So what is it you're trying to accomplish? Do you want liquidity and 4%? Not going to happen. Do you want guarantees with a shorter time horizon of than 20 years? Very difficult. Do you want stable, but maybe not guaranteed? There are things that can do that, but you've got to take that G word out of it. Take the guarantee out of it. I've seen some different investments that pay 4%, 5%, 6% with just a little bit of variability. That's okay. I mean, but maybe it's not okay. That's up to you. So, but that's going to be locked in for 5, 6, 7 years. Can't touch it.
What are we talking about here? What sort of
compliance will have a nightmare?
we could talk live here. Okay, maybe not. All right. Well, we're talking certain
now. There are
insurance
assets.
Type products. What are we?
One that I was thinking of is not an insurance product.
Oh, okay. All right.
There are. Anyway.
That's all right. What you can do is you can call Professor Plum off the air and you can ask him, what in the heck are these things that
now,
you're talking about?
There are insurance-type products that purport to pay 8 or 9% guaranteed returns. That is not true. Now, there are payouts of 5, 6, even 7%. A payout is different than a rate of return. Somebody gives you, or you give somebody $100,000 and they promise to give you $7,000 a year back as a payment to you, is that a rate of return? No, that depends on what you get back at the end of time or when you want your money back. If they promise to give you that $7,000 a year and promise to give you your $100,000 back at the specific at a specific time in the future, that is, and it actually happens, that is a 7% rate of return. But all the insurance-related products that are telling you that you can do that, they're not guaranteeing the principal back at the end of the term of time. So you have to understand the difference between a payout and a rate of return. And in today's economic environment, where CDs are paying less than 1% on a up to 1 year basis, you cannot expect a 4% rate of return with liquidity, with guarantees. You're either tying the money up for a long time or you are taking risk with a principal. Now,
yeah.
Does that mean that you can't create a distribution of 4% from a portfolio? Does that mean that the 4% rule, the 4% guideline, is a hoax? No, there are ways to create a distribution, but it's not necessarily 100% guaranteed.
Yeah, so I think when somebody says, like in Richard's case, are there investment vehicles that provide a guaranteed return of 4% or better? I think what he's looking at is something that you would have seen in a CD 15 years ago, where you could get 4% guaranteed and have it be liquid. That's the sense that I get out of this.
And that isn't happening.
That isn't going to happen.
I mean, we were looking at 5, 6, 7 year guaranteed accounts in the 3 or less range. So that means that to get 4%, you're going to have to go out a lot longer than 7 or 8 or 9 years.
Yes.
Probably longer than 10 years. And are you willing to tie your money up for that long to get that 4%?
Now, you also run the risk too, because if you say, yes, I am willing to do it because I want to get that 4%, and we're talking about 4% per year over that course of
return, not
rate
just
of return. Right. And so you might say, well, yes, okay, so I am willing to wait. But here's what could happen. Between now and then, interest rates could go up.
Right.
And then you run the risk of having your money tied up for 10, 12, 15 years.
Now, the longer it takes for interest rates to go up, the better you feel about it.
Yes, of course.
And the more it has to go up to make it not a good deal.
Right. But if you're 5 years into this and you got another 10 years to go or 7 years to go, and all of a sudden somebody can take the exact same money and put it away for 2 years and get exactly what you're getting,
you're missing out.
Well, yeah. And then...
Yeah, because you could do something better. I mean, it wasn't that many years ago. It was, you know, maybe 10 years ago, we could get fixed accounts for 5, 6, 7 years at 4, 5, 6% even.
Oh, yeah. In fact, the average rate of the average interest rate, I don't have it here and I'm running out of time. The average interest rate, I think, that was paid out by the government, which, of course, is, guaranteed bonds, is something. Oh, I wish I had
well,
it
here. You could buy a fixed guaranteed annuity for 5 years. I remember, I think it was 2005.
Yes.
5% guaranteed for 5 years. And that didn't seem all that attractive back then. You know, we could get it for 7 years. That just didn't seem all that attractive back then because interest rates were more normalized 10, 11,
well,
12 years
look
ago.
Look at it this way. Okay, the average United States government is paying on its interest-bearing debt right now is 2.322%.
That's on all bonds outstanding.
That's everything. Back in the end of 2007, early 2008, 4.838%. You can get that guaranteed.
And that's a government, and you can, you know, using fixed annuities and CDs, you can probably get a better rate of return elsewhere.
You probably could have. All right, we're out of time. We're going to talk more about this guaranteed rate of return. Stick around. If you need the Brain Trust off the air, you want to talk to Professor Rick Plum or any of the Brain Trust advisors at Lucia Capital Group, their off-air number, 800-644-1150. 800-644-1150. Another hour is just ahead of Bucket Strategy Investing.
Information presented should not be considered specific tax, legal, or investment advice. You should always seek counsel of the appropriate advisor prior to making any investment decision. All investments are subject to risk, including the loss of principal. There is no guarantee that any investing or financial planning strategy will be profitable, provide protection from loss, or meet its stated objectives. Investment advisor representatives of Lucia Capital Group are also registered representatives of and offer securities through Lucia Securities LLC, a registered broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. John Dean is an associated person with Lucia Securities LLC. In the information presented, the opinions and views expressed are subject to change without notice and may not come to pass. Registration with the SEC does not imply a certain level of skill or training.